walked right into, and he knows it. He knows it. That's why it's such a shame when they had a chance to impeach the guy that should have done it. Should have done it. Don't know why they didn't. Big mistake. Huge mistake not to have impeached this man when the door was open for it. I'm afraid it's closed now. I just hope people in Congress have the good sense to at least call him into account for the things they've done and make an issue of it and make sure that this kind of thing doesn't happen again in this country. It would be a shame to repeat the mistakes of the Bush administration ever. Ever, ever, ever. Well, thanks for joining us today here in the Guy James Show. Don't forget, we are a listener-supported program, and we need your support right now. It's that time of year, folks. You've been listening to the Guy James Show and the Head On Radio Network. Thanks to Billy Shears, our music director. Thanks to all of you for listening. And don't you dare forget, you've heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth. Later, gang.
Live from Washington, it's the Inside Scoop, with all the news the government does not want you to know. Now, here's the host of the Inside Scoop, Congressional Attorney Mark Levin.
Good evening, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. It's been a busy week in Washington and around the world, and here we discuss all the news the government does not want you to know. We have, of course, the elections. Ralph Nader says that he's going to enter the race. John McCain is filing with the New York Times. Barack Obama is doing pretty good, except for some things that his wife has said. And Hillary Clinton is wondering whether Texas and Ohio will save her from defeat. Around the world, we have Gaza shooting missiles into Israel. Pakistan actually having free elections, to everyone's surprise, going against our ally, the dictator Musharraf. We have Kosovo declaring its independence and the end of the reign of Fidel Castro. And here in Washington, the biggest fight is over revisions to the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act. What kinds of warrantless wiretapping should the president be allowed? Specifically, should he get retroactive amnesty for his past illegal wiretapping, and should he be beyond the law? You can imagine Democrats and Republicans disagree on those issues. Discussing these issues with me today is Mike Lane. He is the president of Intellifence Strategies. It's his job to get Republicans elected. Myself, having worked as a former congressional attorney for the Democrats, it's my job to stop them. Mike, welcome again to the Inside Scoop.
A pleasure to be back, Mark. Thank you for having me.
Lots of things to talk about. I want to encourage our listeners to call in as well. This is a live call-in show. That means feel free to bring it on. You can tell me that I'm full of it. You can disagree with Mike. You can disagree with both of us. We want you to join in the show. Mike, let me start with the election news and start outside the Republican and the Democratic parties with Ralph Nader running again for president of the United States. Now, I've started to lose count. How many times has he run again? Three, four?
I thought it was 34, but...
It may be. Let me just say, as a Democrat, that I loathe Ralph Nader. As I said on my website, I dislike the policy of George Bush, no question about it. I certainly am not a fan of Dick Cheney or Karl Rove. But these are people who are actively working against me. I can see it. They're putting it up front. They claim they're against me, and they are against me. I recognize that. But there's something about a traitor, something about a Benedict Arnold, something about someone who claims to support progressive causes but actually helps out your party that makes me loathe Ralph Nader with a passion. I'm curious to know your view.
Well, you know, Ralph Nader's a guy I simply don't understand. He's one of those people...
He's helping your party, Mike.
Well, okay, I don't have to understand everybody who helps my party if indeed he's doing that. I saw Ralph over the weekend on Meet the Press, I think it was, or one of those shows. He held forth for a good half an hour. And his point was, look, there's nothing I'm going to do that's going to hurt the Democratic nominee. If the Democrats can't win this on their own, you know, then, you know, I'm like nothing to them. So don't look at me as the spoiler. And in fact, I think Ralph has overstayed his welcome. I think that he's likely not to be a factor anyplace. But there's always that chance that in one state that might tip the balance, he might get just, you know, three or four votes too many and tip the balance. It's unlikely. It probably won't happen. But we're glad to see him in the race to see if he might strike lightning.
People always talk about the 97,000 voters in Florida in 2000 that had they simply voted for Gore,
your party
would not have been able to steal it through the United States Supreme Court.
Right.
A lot of people don't talk about the New Hampshire. Gore, just with New Hampshire's electoral votes in 2000, would have won the presidency. Even without Florida, Gore lost by a margin of some 7,000 votes, and Ralph Nader got 23,000 votes. Here's my question. I know that Republicans are funneling money into Ralph Nader's campaign. I understand that. How is it that we can help James Dobson or Pat Buchanan or, heck, David Duke run as a third party to help us Democrats? How is it that you folks can help get Ralph Nader in the race, but we can't get your party in the race?
Well, first, no misstatement goes unchallenged, Mark. And, you know, even in the recount after they did all the chads, George Bush legitimately won the state of Florida.
Only if you don't count the votes.
Therefore, you know, we're very comfortable with the fact that the Supreme Court made the right decision. Now, I'm not going to change the fact, that Ralph Nader probably did tip the balance there. He may have tipped the balance in New Hampshire. There's no doubt he was a factor back in '00. I just don't see him having that kind of impact now, although we hope that he does if we need him. If you want to help James Dobson out, I'm sure you can find him on the internet.
If he'll run, go ahead and send him a check. If he promises to use the money to run as an independent, I might send him a check.
I personally don't know any Republicans who are helping Ralph Nader out, either with money or organization.
I'll give you some if you want some names.
But I do know of some people who are, you know, blogging, some of the real strident people who are blogging that, you know, we ought to be all taking out petitions to get Ralph Nader on the ballot in all 50 states. I don't know any Republicans who are taking them up on that, but...
I'll tell you one. Our ambassador to Ireland, a guy by the name, I think Patrick Egan, gave $300,000 to George Bush's campaign and maxed out on Ralph Nader's campaign.
God bless him, you know.
Any case, one thing I won't let go unchallenged, though, and we could spend hours on 2000, but I want you to look it up, just so we're very, very clear. Mm-hmm. Under any system of counting... If you count all the votes in Florida, I'm not talking about the butterfly ballots. I'm talking about the votes that were legitimately cast, whether you count one-corner chads or two-corner chads, under any system of counting, Gore won Florida if you count all the votes. The only scenarios that allowed Bush to win Florida were when you did not count all the votes. And if you don't believe me, check Matt Drudge, because he agrees with me on this one.
Well, you know, Matt's sort of a...
So does the New York Times, the Washington Post, ABC, Fox News even agrees with me.
Actually, the New York Times and the Washington Post are the ones who headed up the consortium that recounted.
And that's what the consortium found.
And they decided that George Bush had won that by 500-some-odd votes.
You're wrong, Mike. I don't want people to get the wrong impression.
We'll go back to it.
We will go back to this next week, because I'm going to show you, under any system where you count all the votes, Gore won Florida, Gore won the election. You're right, there are some systems where you selectively count only Bush votes, and yes, Bush wins, but only under those systems, and I'll show you that. Let's move on to the other people in the race, and hopefully I'll never have to talk about Ralph Nader again. John McCain was in his own hot water with the New York Times talking about a 41-year-old lobbyist named Vicky Eisman. Now, I will be the first to tell you that I think a man's dalliances outside of marriage are not really relevant to the race. I think it's tabloid stuff, and I don't see why they'd print it. I think the lobbying matters to the extent that you have someone who's a supporter who's paying a politician to do things to help their client. I have real problems with that, but the extramarital stuff, I think it's irrelevant, just like I think Lewinsky was irrelevant.
Well, you know, God bless the New York Times.
They helped your party here,
you know,
too.
Well, they helped my candidate is what they did. I mean, you know, here's John McCain with an admitted problem in consolidating the base, bringing all the conservatives on board, unifying the party so he can then go out towards the general election and take on either Barack Obama or Senator Clinton. And what do we get? We get a sleaze hit job from the New York Times under the theory that the enemy of my enemy is my friend. All of a sudden, John McCain is now the darling of all the conservatives. You listen to talk radio, the same people who were trashing him a mere 7 days ago are all talking about how we have to rally around John McCain and bring everybody together because the New York Times is out to get him, as the New York Times usually will. Of course, you know, anytime there's a problem like this, you send out an email begging for money to take on the
right.
big liberal press.
Right.
The largest single haul of money for McCain in one day ever in the campaign so far. God bless the New York Times.
I'm sure that's true. It's like when the right wing brought up Monica Lewinsky. Democrats rallied to Clinton's defense. All this extramarital stuff, I'd like to just see it out of politics. But the lobbying issue is an important issue because one of the things it reminds people of, and I've found very little talk about this prior to the New York Times article, a little bit afterwards, is a memory of the guy that brought John McCain into office to begin with, a guy by the name of Charles Keating, a certain banker, a certain savings and loans man out in Arizona, who financed all of McCain's early campaign, who at his behest, John McCain went in and tried to take regulators off his case, and when Charles Keating's banks and other savings and loans failed, Americans had to pay hundreds of billions of dollars in tax money to finance that. I think that Charles Keating, unlike Vicky Eisman, is absolutely fair, and we need to talk about it a lot more, and frankly, I'm surprised the media hasn't brought it up more before this article.
You know what? I think John McCain will be happy to talk about his involvement in the Keating 5 scandal. Remember, it was five senators.
He wasn't the only one. The
Keating 5.
Four Republicans and a Democrat.
Three senators lost their seats as a result of it. John McCain was thoroughly investigated by something of a pit bull congressional attorney investigator. You remember who it was? None other than super lawyer Bob Bennett was the guy who went toe-to-toe with him, investigated him, and it was Bob Bennett.
The guy who's representing McCain now?
The guy who's representing McCain now.
Yeah.
It was Bob Bennett's recommendation to the Senate Ethics Committee that John McCain did nothing wrong. And
he was still reprimanded, wasn't he?
Should be reprimanded.
He was formally reprimanded by the United States Senate. How many people even know that, Mike?
I think everybody. It's a matter of public record.
Do you know that?
Who wouldn't know what the Keating 5 was all about? Anyway, Bob Bennett, super lawyer, Democrat extraordinaire, the guy who represented President Clinton in all his Monica Lewinsky stuff,
yes,
you know, et cetera.
All the people.
He was the one who recommended to the Senate that, you know, John McCain, nothing there, guys. It's all smoke, no fire. You know, slap him on the wrist and let's move on because there's nothing there.
Smoke, no fire, but he was in the room trying to get federal regulators to not regulate the very bank that came from the man who gave him these hundreds of thousands of dollars, probably millions of dollars as far as I know. And
well, it's all a matter of public record. Anything you get has to be written down in your campaign finance
reports. So he got the money,
and it's called off
the bank regulators, and once they don't regulate, what happens? We have a huge savings and loans crisis that costs hundreds of billions of dollars. Frankly, it'd be hard to find an example. The bridge to nowhere was a few paltry $200 million. The savings and loans crisis was hundreds of billions of dollars. And while I disagree with the New York Times talking about John McCain's personal life, the lobbying stuff matters, and it's something that I think is going to be a big election, a big issue in November.
You know what? You can try and make it a big issue. Ask any lobbyist on Capitol Hill. They'll tell you that John McCain is the most unapproachable, prickly, get-out-of-my-office kind of senator you'll ever find up there. He has a consistent track record over 20 years of not dealing with lobbyists.
Simply not true. We learned from Vicky Eisman and Charles Keating.
Well, you know what? I'm talking about post-Keating.
Well, post-Keating.
He admitted on the record that the Keating experience was a learning experience, and he turned 180 degrees as a result of that, and for the last 20 years, lobbyists can't get near McCain.
Really? Because his campaign manager is a lobbyist. How did he get so close?
Mark, anybody's allowed to take a leave of absence from their business. Right. Anybody's allowed to be a friend.
I'm sure it won't affect
you. You know what, Mark? I used to be a lobbyist back in a previous life. And you know what? I'm not a bad guy.
I don't know.
And you know what?
I don't know. And I'm sitting next to you.
John McCain.
I see fire. I see horns.
John McCain will happily accept my vote and my contribution if I, you know, choose to write him a check.
Look, they're lobbyists and they're lobbyists, okay? People that are advocating on behalf of groups of people that get together for a cause, whether it's the NRA or pro-choice or pro-life or pro-civil rights, I have no problem with that. But people who are using corporate dollars from shareholders that didn't authorize them to try to make more money for their corporations, because that's all corporations do, by bribing members of Congress, which is what those corporate lobbyists do, I have a real problem with that.
I was a corporate lobbyist. I never bribed a single person. You know, I got
to
tell you.
You gave money to someone's campaign in order to help your corporation, right?
The $5,000 that a corporate PAC or a trade association PAC is limited to providing for any given campaign is just not enough to bribe anybody.
Isn't the only goal?
No one's going down for $5,000.
Is the goal of a corporation to make money? Isn't that the goal of a corporation?
Mark, if you want to trash capitalism, go ahead.
No. Let me just get this straight. The goal of a corporation is to make money.
The goal
right?
of a corporation is
now,
to return
you,
money to their shareholders.
If you are paying money to a politician, either you expect to get something back in return or you don't. If you don't get anything back in return, you have wasted money for your corporation. If you do get something back in return, isn't that the definition of bribery?
If you get something back in return, yes, that is bribery.
Yeah.
But I don't know anybody.
So why pay money if it's going to waste? Why do corporations pay all this money? Because they expect something back in return.
No. You support people who agree with you in the first place. That's what you do. It's not that you get something. It's no quid pro quo. What you do is you find a certain number of people, key races, where something's going to, you know, if the other guy gets it, you're dead, and there's a friend of yours out there, you try and get them elected. That's the way corporations work.
If individuals want to do that, that's fine by me. But corporations using shareholders' money, I'm against it.
You got to talk to the Supreme Court about that.
Well, I disagree. Folks, if you want to join this discussion, join us. It's easy to do. The number's on your screen, 571-749-1166. We'll be right back.
How far would you go to help someone? Would you go to the end of your driveway? Would you cross a street? Would you cross an ocean? To a place 6,000 miles from home? And how long would you go? Would you go for a week? A month? A year? Would you go for 2 years? Would you go if you could use your knowledge to teach someone? And in the process, maybe learn something yourself. Life is calling. How far will you go? Peace Corps.
Jay, don't forget your helmet.
Will do.
Your bike helmet.
Oh, okay. Hi, I'm James Thrash with the Washington Redskins. On the football field, a helmet is an important piece of equipment. I also wear another helmet that's just as important. A bike helmet. It's the most important piece of equipment you'll have the next time you're out on your bike. Wear yours and make sure your kids do too. Safety first with the Skins.
Monica and her friends want you to know that you should never get near a dog when it is eating, playing with a favorite toy, or sleeping. It's really important to make time for exercise and games and keep your dog's vaccines up to date. Never leave a dog in a small, confined space. This can make dogs aggressive like Monica. If you follow this advice, you and your dog can play safely and happily together.
We are back to the Inside Scoop. Call in live and let your voice be heard. Here again, your host, Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. If you want to call in, we encourage you to do so, to join in this debate. The number is on your screen. There's a toll-free number if you're listening on the Internet. We have listeners from around the globe. The toll-free number is 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. Some of you like to write in. That's okay, too. We'll read your comments on the air. Just go to radioinsidescoop.com. Mike, moving on to the Democrats. Hillary Clinton's struggling. I think if she loses Ohio and Texas, she might just declare an end to her campaign. What's interesting is she's really only behind by 100 delegates. If she wins Texas and Ohio, then I think she's got a fair chance to fight all the way to the convention, and actually it's a mess for us Democrats. So it's easier if she loses both and concedes to Barack Obama. I've always liked both of them. I'd be okay with either one of them. But it just sounded to me like in her debate with Obama that she was starting to wax eloquent, but start to say goodbye.
Well, there was a very eloquent close that she made in the Texas debate, which could be interpreted by some people that way. But if you look at what she's been doing the last 2-3 days
she's
on
the
campaign
attack,
trail,
right?
She's on the attack. She's caustic. She's sarcastic. She's ridiculing Obama. I mean, this is the stuff, I got to tell you, this is the stuff of which, you know, campaign commercials are made come the fall. We're going to be using some of the things that Senator Clinton's been using.
Yeah, but most of her attacks on him are things like, you know, health care, where they have a legitimate disagreement, but they agree on 95%.
Mark, in Rhode Island, she's talking about the kumbaya candidate. You know, she's talking about the heavens opening and
good.
The celestial choirs singing.
Yeah, that's not good, Hillary. No, it's not. It's not. I mean, it reminds me of a certain George Herbert Walker Bush, who's talked about voodoo economics when he ran against Ronald Reagan. We'll get to Obama, too, but first I want to go to our listener on the phone, because they always get priority. Maureen from Arlington, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Hi. Well, I wanted to comment on the whole issue of lobbyists.
Yes, please.
I think it's not a black and white issue, but clearly the unions are like lobbyists, and so are the teachers' unions, and so is anyone who wants to have influence with a politician, basically by getting the person in who thinks like them. I think they have too much power. On the other hand, who's to tell them they can't do it?
Well, Maureen, let me suggest to you there's a difference between unions and corporations. For example, unions are a bunch of people that are joining together for a common goal, right?
No, they're not.
Corporations, shareholders invest in corporations in order to make money. You have people who are CEOs of corporations, and they're not even really responsible to their shareholders. There's a big difference. No, they're not.
Teachers' unions. Look at the teachers' unions.
You know, if the shareholders
aren't
having...
Have you ever seen a corporate election where they lost? I mean, it happens, what, 1 in 1,000 times?
Well, the shareholders are happy.
Well, obviously not, because the way these things are, you know, you have CEOs that make hundreds of millions of dollars as their company loses billions of dollars. It's not a democratic process. At least with unions, you have people... Like I said, I support the right of the NRA to lobby, and I don't agree with the NRA. But these are individuals coming together to support their economic self-interest. Corporations, I may invest in a corporation just to make money. That doesn't mean that I want the corporation controlling my politics. I mean, there's a difference between joining an organization because I agree with its political goals and going in just to make money.
Wait, to have a career, sometimes you have to join the union. That's not fair.
Well, you could argue, you could make an argument that if you have to join a union, that therefore those unions shouldn't be able to spend political funds. If you did that and at the same time barred corporations from doing it, I would support that. I would. I think there's a distinct difference there.
Maureen, which of the big two, the corporations or the labor unions, do you think is the more insidious or more corrupt of the lobbying efforts?
Well, you've got Enron, and yet you have the... teachers' unions in many states are incredibly corrupt, and so are the unions, the regular unions, AFL-CIO. Look at what happened in D.C. I mean, what was it? That head of the teachers' union was indicted for how much? And there's another one in New Jersey? Oh, come on.
You know, I don't know, Maureen. I look at teachers who are trying to help kids learn and are the lowest paid in America and almost any other industrialized country on earth. And then I look at Enron, and Enron is, let's see, it's sacrificing, playing around with Americans' electric bills and going and sacrificing everybody's pensions. I don't know. I guess I think I prefer teachers over Enron.
That's assuming that anyone who works for a corporation is as bad as the worst person in the corporation.
No, it assumes that the people running corporations are not spending their own money. People in unions, people in NRA or pro-choice, they're spending their own money. Corporations are playing with our money, and therefore the government has a right to regulate what they do with our money.
Look, there's no doubt that Ken Lay was a crook. I mean, without a doubt, you know, he was a crook, and he was, you know,
going to go on trial.
Charlie Keating was a crook, without a doubt.
Right.
And Charlie Keating went to jail for a pretty long time, and Ken Lay would have gone to jail for a long time.
3 years. Not long enough.
But he got the ultimate sanction instead. Fate took care of that one. you've got as much corruption, if not more, on the union side. And just because you have a corporation like Enron doesn't mean that all the people who work for Enron are necessarily bad. It doesn't mean that the stockholders are bad. What the stockholders expect is they expect the corporation to pursue those policies that will make the corporation even more profitable. And, you know,
but there's a huge difference, Mike, between people who support various political goals, whatever they are. It could be anything from legalization of marijuana to, you know, supporting a woman's right to choose or the NRA.
But corporations don't involve themselves in those kinds of things.
Exactly. You know? Corporations are all about making profits. And there's a difference between supporting a candidate's campaign as a way of saying I'm pro-life or pro-choice and saying I'm going to pay off a businessman. I mean, listen. Government gives lots of money to corporations. Your party
corporations give money to the government.
Well,
the government doesn't
give
money to,
of course they do.
How does the government give money? They don't
corporate
give
welfare.
Money.
Sure, oil companies, gas companies,
Mark.
Special tax
what
breaks.
A tax cut. That means that you don't send more in. You're
that
still
means
sending
that they,
money
they get
in.
Special
They're not taking
breaks.
Any money out.
They get special breaks.
Okay, let me. All right, I don't understand. This is a typical Democratic mentality. Let's say I'm a corporation and I owe $1 million. But because of some loophole in the tax company, now I'm only going to pay $750,000.
Yeah, because you paid off some politician.
For whatever reason, now I'm only going to pay. I'm still giving you $750,000. I'm not getting $250,000.
Yes.
I'm giving $750,000.
You paid off a politician.
No, I didn't.
You get a $250,000 break.
It's a public policy reason why they have that.
No, it isn't. Exxon and Mobil, who are the richest corporations in the world, who've earned more money last quarter than any corporation in the world, somehow need more money from us taxpayers. We're going to tax the waitress who's working three jobs to give more money to Exxon and Mobil.
Who owns Exxon Mobil? It's teachers' unions.
No.
It's pension plans.
Shareholders.
That is who owns
Exxon Mobil. It's
trick. Teacher unions.
The money
it's public employee unions. It's pension plans. That's who owns Exxon Mobil.
It's
not little guys like you and me. Yeah, okay, we have a couple hundred shares maybe. But
Most corporations are a scam. Most corporations, very little money gets back to the shareholders. What they do is they have these wonderful things called golden parachutes where the guy can make hundreds of millions of dollars as the shareholders lose money. If corporations believe
golden
in capitalism
are
the way
separate.
I believe in capitalism, then corporations would say, if you lose hundreds of billions of dollars for the company, then you have to pay that money or you get fired. You don't reward incompetence. You know, Republicans, Maureen, you talk about teachers. Maureen, answer this. Republicans say that bad teachers should be fired. They say that there should be merit pay for teachers. How do you feel about merit pay for corporations? In other words, if you have a CEO run a corporation into the ground, they lose all of the salary they've ever made for that corporation. What do you think?
Love it.
It's good
love
for
it.
Me.
Great. This is
good
one thing we can all agree on.
But I'm also interested in some fair play about teachers. There are wonderful teachers out there who should get paid for doing a good job. And look at D.C. I mean, they're trying very hard to fix that system. But there are teachers there who don't do a good job, and there are saints there who do a wonderful job, and they're all paid the same.
And I will agree with you that we can fire bad teachers. I will agree with you. Let's fire bad teachers. I think one of the reasons we have bad teachers, Maureen, is we don't pay teachers enough, so we can't get enough good people to work in the field. I mean, I worked as an inner-city school teacher for a few months. Frankly, if they paid teachers more, people like me would be teachers. We don't pay teachers enough. Now, I'm all for firing the bad teachers, but if there are no good teachers out there because we don't pay people enough, then sometimes we have bad teachers, and it's really just the fault of the system.
Let's come back and do a show on teachers sometime.
You know what? We should.
Right.
We should. And I'd be happy to do that. Maureen, thanks for your call. Thanks for arguing with me. I appreciate it,
even though
I gave you a hard time.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Thanks for your call. We got a couple of minutes left before the break, Mike. I want to talk.
Let me hit Hillary quick because you started her and I didn't finish her.
All right, fine.
You know what? I think even if she wins Texas and Ohio, that she's still not in it. The superdelegates are a double-edged sword. It's her reason for staying in the race. She's going to stay in the race for the foreseeable future because there's that superdelegate count that she's out there. But the superdelegates are breaking for Obama,
and they're
going to be her loss. She's going to stay in the race.
Even if she loses Texas and Ohio?
She can stay in the race. As long as there's a mathematical possibility of getting those superdelegates, she'll stay in the race.
So you predict if she loses Texas
this
and Ohio...
This is her lifelong dream. She's not going to give it up.
I know it is, but I think if she loses Texas and Ohio, both states, then even I will start calling for her to leave the race.
All right.
But if she wins one of them, I think that that's enough.
And
to
I'll call for her to stay
in.
Because God bless Hillary Clinton.
Now let's talk about Barack Obama. You said you wanted to talk about Michelle Obama and the comment that she's been pilloried for. Let's see if you get the comment right. What did she say?
I believe she said something to the effect of, and I'll give you as much of the quote as I can remember, that for the first time in her adult life, she's actually proud of her country because the people out there are listening and they want change,
the
or something like that.
She's, for the first time in her adult life, she's really,
really proud of her
country.
Because
a lot of times Republicans aren't getting the quote right.
Because people are out there and they want change, I think was what she said. Now, how people wanting change can make you proud, I don't know.
Well, what if she had said it like this? Okay, and I agree, that was the wrong thing to say. What if she had said, never in my adult life have I been so proud of my country, you wouldn't have had a problem with that, right? Because that's what I think she meant.
Yes. First of all, this nebulous change that doesn't mean anything is making her proud. More proud than when the Soviet Union collapsed. More proud than when the Berlin Wall came down.
That's not
more
about proud, the United States. That's about the rest of the world.
United States policies made that happen.
Yes, but
and she's more proud about this nebulous change thing.
Folks, if you want to call in like Maureen did, bring it on. We'll be right back.
Serves a sentence with you.
I'm Bob Costas, and I've been broadcasting sports for a long time. Much of what I do is ad-libbed, but still, one of the most important aspects of my job is being able to write. Narrations, essays, commentaries. It's essential to express those thoughts and concepts clearly and concisely. Good writing is essential for almost any career. And with today's advanced technology, the National Commission on Writing reports that the need to write well has never been more important. Writing is everybody's business.
Sure, my neighbors Gene and Louise, they may be superheroes with superpowers, but that doesn't make them so super at saving energy and money.
Honey!
I may not be able to harness the power of the elements, but I save significant cash and help the environment with appliances, electronics, and windows featuring the Energy Star label. So discover your own energy-saving superpowers. Go to ASE.org/consumers.
Mom, Dad's making fondue again.
We are back to the Inside Scoop. Call in live and let your voice be heard. Here again, your host, Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. A lot happened last week. Sometimes I think the media is only focused on the presidential elections, and as important as they are, a lot happened around the world last week. Good news, I think, in Pakistan and Kosovo. Fair news in Cuba. Mostly good, I guess, although I don't think it changes much. And some really ugly news in Gaza. Let me start with the bad news, Mike, so we can conclude with the good. And this may be something you and I agree on. In Gaza, you have Hamas continuing to shoot missiles, just continuing to shoot missile after missile into the town of Sidi Rouj, trying to harm women and children, literally 40 missiles a day. And Europe has just come out saying that they want Israel to make sure that they give fuel to the very people who are shooting the missiles. Interestingly, Hamas tried to have its own protest against Israel denying fuel to them so they can shoot the missiles, and they couldn't. They planned for 50,000 people. They put out all the press releases. They could only get 5,000, and they were virtually all children. Apparently, there wasn't enough fuel to get them to the site, and so they were marching children out of the schools to serve in this way, and presumably to put them in front of where Israel might respond. I think it's disgusting. I think that Israel may have to go to war. There are no easy options for them because, frankly, reoccupying Gaza may cost more lives than seeing it out. But I'm just shocked by how little the world has done. And frankly, I'm a little angry at the Bush administration for not coming out there and saying very loudly, this has to stop. I'd like to see them do that.
Well, there's no doubt that Hamas is a despicable, disgusting terrorist organization that ought to be just, you know, wiped off the face of the Middle East. These people are animals. They're butchers. They have no concept of reality or humanity. They just need to go, and if they need to go at the end of a gun muzzle, then that's the way they're going to go. It's unfortunate that the Palestinian people chose them in
06.
An election,
I don't
guess.
Think they would again.
They won't again. They won't again. They realize their mistake.
But I don't think there'll be another election.
You know what? There's chaos. There's no order. There's no government. There's no nothing over there. They couldn't have an election. They couldn't even have a crooked election over there. That's how bad things are. And it's a shame, but it may be that Hamas goes away at the end of a gun muzzle, but they've got to go away.
Should George Bush do more? Should he go? I mean, this United Nations Security Council always seems to want to punish Israel. They never seem to want to do anything about Hamas shooting these missiles every single day into Israeli sovereign territory. I mean, Israel left Gaza. It doesn't occupy Gaza.
Right.
And instead of going away in peace and trying to build a Palestinian state, it seems they're just out to kill. Don't you think George Bush needs to come out very strongly and condemn this?
He should condemn it without a doubt. He should condemn it. I think he's made a few things that were not strong enough for my particular taste on this. But yes, I mean, this is one of those areas where it's just there's no disagreement among friends. There's no arguable this way, the other way. Europe is just dead wrong on this. The president needs to be stronger. The Israelis may need to reoccupy Gaza, as you pointed out.
Unfortunately, it may be coming.
They had Gaza because it was a defensive thing. They
right.
gave it up in a goodwill gesture, and all they're getting for it is terrorism.
I know. I'll tell you, we may have a caller who disagrees with both of us. Samira from Reston, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Yes, hello.
Hello.
First of all, I would like to say that the people in Gaza are occupied. Palestine is occupied for
Wait, but there are no Israeli troops in Gaza.
They're occupied.
Wait, hold on. How are they occupied if there's no Israeli troops in Gaza?
Of course, they are under the Israeli occupation.
No, they're not. They're simply not.
No.
You can't call black white. There are no Israeli troops in Gaza. Now, how do you consider that an occupation?
They are committing genocide against the Palestinian people in Gaza. What do you mean you by nobody's died? Every day, Israel kills 3 or 4 Palestinians.
They kill the terrorists that are shooting missiles into Israel.
Let me speak. The Israelis use F-16 American bombs, shoot Palestinians daily. Let me give you the numbers.
More than thousands of Palestinians
are killed by Israelis. The Israeli killed by those Qassam missiles are less than 13 in 7 years. These are Israeli statistics. You know? The Qassam missiles are like comparing an ant to an elephant. The Palestinians are living under the most inhumane conditions. They are blockaded.
Why are they under inhumane conditions?
Because of the Israeli occupation.
Really?
They want them to die off. They're committing genocide.
Why don't they stop shooting missiles
against
Israel
the people in Gaza
and take care of their own people?
The UN inspectors just last week went in there and said the blockade.
A blockade, right. Do you think that the United States had a right to respond to September 11th?
They don't get medicine. They don't get electricity. They are under severe humanitarian conditions.
Look, I mean, if you're just going to keep yelling in a monitor, we can't have a discussion. I'd like to discuss with you, but if you're just going
to
keep talking, we'll cut you off.
To defend themselves.
Do you hear a word I'm saying?
The settlers.
No, you don't. That's too bad. Look, this is the kind of thing I think that really disturbs me. I mean, Israel leaves Gaza in a goodwill gesture. They try to sign an agreement. They try to leave so they don't have to leave unilaterally. They can't get anyone to sign an agreement with. So they leave. They say, all right, no occupation. Go on your way. Good luck. Genocide? It's amazing the things that people will say.
If Samira had perhaps calmed down for just a moment, I wanted to ask her, first of all, I would agree with her that, you know, there's devastation over there.
Of course there is.
And they are living a very bad, destitute life.
Yes, they are.
But I wanted to find out from her how much she would blame Hamas for that bad, destitute life, because as bad as you might argue things were before, when Hamas took over 2 years ago, or just less than 2 years ago, things have gone downhill about 7,000% since then.
I
want to know if Samira would have acknowledged that, or if she still would have argued that it's not Hamas that's doing this. When it is Hamas that's doing it?
In the West Bank, where there still are Israeli troops, I think anyone would have to agree people are living a lot better than they are in Gaza. There was an interesting article in the Washington Post, I found it fascinating, where you had people in Gaza who had an orchard right next to the Israeli border. And every single day, Hamas would come in and shoot missiles off, and come in and shoot missiles off, and come in and shoot missiles off into Sadeh Road, you know, killing innocent people, civilians. And the woman who owned the orchard would every day go out and say, Hamas, get out of my orchard. And they wouldn't, and Israel would respond, and they would hit missiles, and Hamas would run, and her orchard would get destroyed. Well, unfortunately, one day she was out there saying, get out. Get out, stop using my yard as a war site, and Israel responded to the missiles, which every sovereign nation has to respond.
Right, you have an absolute right to defend yourself,
And she was killed. And what happened is that her son decided to chop down the orchard, which was giving cover to Hamas. He had to destroy, and I think he did the right thing, but he had to destroy his own orchard as a way to prevent Hamas from using his home as a battleground. If the Palestinians want a state, Israel is more than happy to give them one. Obama, McCain, and Bush is more than happy to give them one. All Israel wants is peace, and it's amazing to me that once Israel unilaterally left, that they would continue to use it to make war rather than helping their own people. I do hope that Abbas can be the kind of moderate Palestinian who can make a deal with Olmert and help his people and show a different way from Hamas. And we'll just have to see. But I got to tell you, if Gaza's any indication, Israelis aren't going to want to sign a deal.
Right. Well, see,
they think this is going to happen.
The problem is Abbas at this point can't control his own territory and his own people.
Right.
And absent that, Omer has no incentive to actually sign an agreement.
I think that's right. Let me move on to some better news. In Pakistan, something surprising happened. Musharraf, it looks like, allowed a free election. Or else...
Who'd have thunk it?
Well, maybe he actually manipulated it to help his side, but not by enough. You know, maybe he put millions of votes in the canister, but he still lost dramatically. The people of Pakistan voted, for Benazir Bhutto's party. She died a miserable death, but in her death, perhaps she will find life. Her party won the plurality. Between her and the other opposition Muslim party, they won a majority. Musharraf, I think you'll agree with me, should step down. The question is, what do we do if he doesn't? And I would argue that the Bush administration has tied a little bit too closely to Musharraf. We need to be out there where the Pakistani people are and not where this dictator is, no matter how much he helps them.
Well, the preliminary indication is that Musharraf is going to step down, that there's not going to be a problem.
I hope so.
Senator Biden came back from a meeting on Election Day, or the day after Election Day, with Musharraf and said he was totally amazed that Musharraf walked in and he said, well, the people have spoken.
Wow.
You know, I've lost. I know what has to happen now, you know, et cetera. So preliminary indications is that it's going to be a peaceful transition of power. Now, if it's not, as you point out, I think we have to be on the side of the people. I do think that. And the good news is that the opposition parties to Musharraf are friends of the United States, too. This is not going to be one of those things where we're getting rid of an SOB, but he's our SOB, so we're going to keep him. You know, Benazir Bhutto's party is very friendly, very pro-Western. We're going to do well on
that.
And the
other party is fine as well. Don't you think Joe Biden would make a great Secretary of State?
Joe Biden.
He may be our next Secretary of State.
Joe Biden's a very interesting guy.
Mark my words.
I think John McCain has somebody else in mind for that, but we'll see.
Let me move on to the question of Kosovo. I'm very proud of what happened in Kosovo. Here you have a nation that was under genocide, where you had the Serbians actually doing ethnic cleansing, rounding up people and trying to kill them. This is a nation that is 90% Albanian, 10% Serbian, and yet the Serbians wanted to control every bit of it, largely because of a battle they lost to the Turks in 1389. I will say this. The 10% of Kosovo that's Serbian, I think, should have a right to secede from Kosovo, just as I think Kosovo had a right to secede from Serbia. It's in the north, most of it, and it touches Serbia, and I think it's perfectly fair, just as I think the Kosovo should have self-determination, as long as they don't attack anybody else. I think the Palestinians should have self-determination as long as they don't attack anybody else. I think the Serbs in Kosovo should have a right to secede from Kosovo. And that may be something, it won't make Serbia really happy, but I think it's a sop that we could throw to them as a way to just draw the lines where the ethnic boundaries are so that everyone feels they have a choice in their government.
Mark, we're going to set a record for agreement tonight, which I'm not sure is a good thing. But
no,
yes, I think the Kosovones, very, very good, very brave thing they did to declare their independence. It took the Bush administration only 24 hours to recognize them and to establish diplomatic relations with them. The key thing, I think, here is to watch how this plays out vis-a-vis the Soviet Union, of course, which was very opposed to it.
They're called Russia now.
Well, that's right. They are not the Soviet Union. They're Russia. The Putinistas. They were not happy with this, and they issued a warning that they didn't think this was a good thing. Bush went ahead and recognized them anyway. I think Putin sort of boxed in on this one. Will he retaliate by having certain pieces of the various stands over there south of what
he's got to do something, because the Russian Orthodox Church is close to the Serbian Orthodox Church. He's got to make a little Sturm und Drang. But at the end of the day, I don't think it'll change anything. I don't think the Serbians burning our American embassy will change much of anything.
No.
The Serbians, I think it's very interesting. When Milosevic was in charge is when all these nasty things happened, ethnic cleansing, genocide, and it wasn't just against Kosovo, of course. It was in Bosnia and other places. But then they elected out Milosevic. They elected a much more, I think, peaceful Serbian leader. And since then, I think Serbia has really rejoined the community of nations. I think that those that set the American embassy on fire, I hope and pray, I think they're a minority, and I think that we should reach out to Serbia as well. This battle is over. Yugoslavia has been divided along ethnic lines. Good fences make good neighbors. Let's help both Serbia and Kosovo succeed.
Right now it looks like we can still work with the Serbians. I hope they continue to want to work with us, notwithstanding their...
Well, I think we can offer them 10% of Kosovo, right? I mean, that's the standard to work for.
That's a minor detail. It's a minor detail. But the issue is that, they failed to protect the embassy when they had an obligation under international law to do so. If that's their only indiscretion, then we can move forward from here. If they continue to have indiscretions like that, it's going to be more difficult.
Mike from Centerville, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Nope,
we lost Mike from Centerville. All right, then let's move on and talk about the last foreign policy thing, and that's, of course, Cuba. Fidel Castro was there, 49 years? You think he'd make it a nice even 50, but
he
didn't.
You would have.
I think he was the longest ruling leader on the planet, I think. Maybe Queen Elizabeth II, but she doesn't really count because she's just a titular leader. Fidel Castro was firmly in charge. But he left it to his brother. I don't think anything's going to change in Cuba until both Castros are gone. But I do see this as an opportunity to reach out to Cuba and to say to Cuba, if you are willing to have a democracy and have a free election, we will end the embargo, we'll end the trade sanctions, we'll give full diplomatic relations. We need to make that offer very clear so that people understand why we're against Cuba. It's not, in my view, because we're against socialism or we're against his economic policy, purely because we're against his dictatorship.
There were two things in Cuba. One was the regime, which needs to change, and we want it to change for the good of the Cuban people. And the other was...
If they elected Castro, I'm okay with it.
Right.
The other one
was Fidel Castro. And so Fidel Castro is gone. 50% of the problem is gone with that one move of Fidel Castro stepping down.
You don't think Raul will be just as bad?
Well, no, he will be just as bad, but I think that politically... We were not in a position to do anything because the Cuban lobby was so strong that we couldn't do anything with Cuba. You notice that nobody, absolutely nobody running for national office is calling for the olive branch, the outreach, with Cuba, this, that, and the other thing. It's because the Cuban vote in Florida coming up is way too important.
Obama kind
nobody,
of is.
You know what?
He kind of is.
Yeah,
he is.
Not really.
Well, but look, but why can't we make it very clear? And I think even the Cuban exiles in Florida should accept this. If we said, look, this isn't about the expropriation. I don't think it is. I don't think we can argue about their economic policy. To me, that's something that's their issue. But in terms of a democracy, don't you think the United States should say that we will end the embargo, we'll end the trade sanctions, full diplomatic relations? All we ask is that you have a free and fair election with monitors.
Absolutely, and we will say that.
We haven't said it very clearly.
But even more, what we'll do is we'll start moving towards that right after the election. No matter who's elected, even though they're not going to tell you during the campaign because they want the Cuban vote in Florida in November, be it John McCain or be it Barack Obama or be it Senator Clinton, Any one of those three is going to start to back-channel negotiations with Raul Castro to see what they can do, to see if there's any movement. And don't think that maybe there's not some movement that you can work with this guy. We couldn't work with Fidel, but Raul, now that Fidel's gone, there may be some movement, 10-20%, something like that, leading to free and fair elections upon Raul stepping down.
Now, here's what I find interesting. Mike, you and I are arguing all the time when it comes to Iraq. We couldn't disagree more. But here, if I look at the four corners of the globe where there was activity this week, in Gaza, in Pakistan, in Kosovo, in Cuba, so you've got, what, North America, Europe, the Middle East, and Asia, and Democrats and Republicans, you and me, we're not far apart on any of those countries, are we?
Not on those particular ones, because they're relatively easy ones. They're small, they're easy.
It's just important to point out where we agree from time to time.
I'm fairly certain that by the time our relationship is over that you'll be in agreement with me on the Middle East as well.
Well, I'm in agreement on Gaza. I'm not in agreement on Iraq. Let me talk to one area, go from great agreement to great disagreement, extreme disagreement. And that has to do with the president who is wiretapping all of us illegally and wants permission to do it. Now, the only issues regarding the big fight that happened in Washington last week between the Republicans and the Democrats, there were only two main issues. One was called retroactivity, and the other was called exclusivity. Let's make clear what those two issues are. Retroactivity, which is also called telecommunications immunity, would retroactively make legal all of the illegal acts that George Bush did in spying on Americans without a warrant. If it were legal, he wouldn't need amnesty. So all it does is retroactively makes legal all he did in the past illegally. And then the second issue, which is actually more severe and is hardly ever discussed, exclusivity. The FISA law, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, well, tell you what, we'll get to exclusivity in a second. Let's talk about retroactivity first. I can play for you what George Bush says is the reason he wants it, you know what? Let me do that.
Go ahead.
Okay. We'll let George Bush say his side for the moment.
As Warner Wolf used to say, let's go right to the video.
All right. Here, this is George Bush on this issue.
We also just discussed a serious problem facing our country, and that is the fact that House leaders blocked a good piece of legislation that will give our intelligence community the tools they need to protect America from a terrorist attack. American citizens must clearly understand, that there is still a threat on the homeland.
Let me just stop there. That's ridiculous. Americans must understand there's clearly a threat to the homeland. That's out of bounds, isn't it? I mean, did anyone say, oh, there's no threat to the homeland? I mean, come on. That rhetoric has got to stop.
I think that by failing to reauthorize FISA and the Protect America Act, what the Democrats in the House of Representatives are doing is diminishing in their own eyes, and certainly in the eyes of the far left, the fact that there is an ongoing threat.
Bush refused to extend it himself. Should we say that George Bush doesn't recognize there's a real threat out there? The Republicans in the House, as you know, And George wanted, the Democrats and the Republicans wanted to extend this law for a few more weeks while they worked it out. George Bush said, no, we're going to veto it. The Republicans in the Senate filibustered it. Should Democrats now say, Republicans don't understand this threat?
There comes a time when it's just time to get with the program. Now, you know, how many times have we extended this? How many more times do we need to just, you know, fiddle around with it? The president made very clear what he wanted. He's very, very happy with the Senate bill.
Senate bill makes legal all his illegal conduct.
68 bipartisan votes in favor of it in the Senate.
I've had a real fight with Senator Jim Webb of Virginia.
Senator Webb voted for it, yes.
As you know, he said he voted for it. At the same time, he put forward a letter where he said he preferred the House bill. It's not like there's just the Senate bill. The House in November of last year passed the Restore Act, which protects our civil liberties, allows us to go after the bad guys, but at the same time doesn't retroactively make legal what was illegal before. Webb says he supports that bill, but then push came to shove, he got scared by this kind of rhetoric, and he voted the wrong way. But the point is, that's not his preference. Just like he's pushing the Senate bill, we can push the House bill. Let me play for you a little bit more about what he says about this.
This bill comes to the House of Representatives, and it was blocked. And by blocking this piece of legislation, our country is more endangered of an attack. By not giving the professionals the tools they need, it's going to be a lot harder to do the job we need to be able to defend America. People say, oh, it doesn't matter if this law hasn't been renewed. It does matter. It matters for a variety of reasons. It matters because the intelligence officials won't have tools necessary to get as much information as we possibly can to protect you. And it matters because these telephone companies that work collaboratively with us to protect the American people are afraid they're going to get sued. And the American people got to understand these lawsuits make it harder for us to convince people to help protect you. And so by blocking this good piece of legislation, you know, our professionals tell me that they don't have all the tools they need to do their job. And so now the House and Senate are off on a 12-day recess without getting the people's business done. And when they come back from that 12-day recess, the House leaders must understand that the decision they made to block good legislation has made it harder for us to protect you, the American people. And we expect them to get a good bill to my desk, which is a Senate bill, as soon as possible. Thank you.
Now, what we have here is the president saying, I want it my way or the highway. I want the Senate bill, not the House bill, or we're all in danger. We're more in danger of attack. Be wary, America. Be fearful. If you don't do it exactly my way, I will open up the country to terrorist attack. The Democrats could have said exactly the same thing. Mr. President, we passed a good bipartisan bill. It's called the Restore Act. It was passed in the Hill November 07. We urge you to pass the Senate, to get that bill and to pass it down. We urge you to sign this, Mr. President. If you don't, we're open to a terrorist attack. The Democrats didn't use that rhetoric.
All right.
It's the same rhetoric.
Couple things, Mark. First of all, the my way or the highway comment. No. The president knows what's necessary to protect the safety and security of the American people, and he knows he needs something very, very close to what the Senate just passed.
Why does he need retroactive amnesty for his illegal acts?
I'll tell you why he needs amnesty for the phone companies.
Yeah, tell me why.
Because if I'm a CEO of Quest or Bell South or Bell Atlantic or whatever their names are these days, they seem to change all the time. If I'm CEO of one of those things, the government came to me and said, you know, in good faith, we want you to help us out and do this because we really, really need this. I looked at it. My lawyer said, okay, we can do it. The government's asking our help. We did it. Now the question has come up from the trial lawyer bar who just wants to sue people and make money.
Oh, it's all about suing people and making money.
For the trial bar, yes, it is. It's all about suing people. And that's all it's about is suing people and making money for the trial bar. Anyway, what they want to do now is they want to sue these companies and just, you know, scam them for hundreds of millions of dollars in a court. Well, okay, the next time we need something from Quest or from Bell South or from Bell Atlantic or something like that, when the government goes there and says,
get
you know what,
warrant.
We need your help. You know what I'm going to do if I'm CEO? I'm going to say, dude, no, I'm facing right now over $3 or $4 billion worth of lawsuits. Until you give me immunity from these things, you're not getting anything from me.
It's a very
And why would I put my corporation at risk for $3 or $4 billion worth of lawsuits if you can't protect
Here's
me?
Here's the answer.
And all they're
here's
trying
the answer,
to do is protect
Mike.
America, Mark.
If it's legal. If the conduct is legal, they need not fear the lawsuit.
Legality? Sure you do.
No.
Legal.
Okay.
Whether it's legal has nothing to do with whether or not the trial bar is going to shake them down for green mail to the tune of billions of dollars. That's the way you do it. That's the way the game's played.
Easy answer. There was an amendment in the Senate, and what the amendment would do is have the government reimburse the telephone companies for all their legal expenses and all their payments. And what happened on that amendment? The Republicans voted it down, and George Bush opposed it. And you want to know why? Because this isn't about the poor, helpless telecommunications companies. This is about allowing lawless behavior.
Mark.
The reason why the Republicans don't want to reimburse the telecommunications companies is because they want to give the president amnesty for his illegal acts. This is retroactive. This is 7 years of warrantless wiretapping, probably on hundreds of millions of innocent Americans. And when people try to find out what's going on there and they sue, the president says, state secrets, sovereign immunity, I'm not going to tell you. So by suing the corporations, it's the only protection we have to find out how our government is violating the Fourth Amendment. If it's all about the telecommunications companies, why not allow reimbursement?
All right. First of all, you know, how you can say the Republicans voted something down in the Senate is beyond me. Last I checked, the Democrats controlled the Senate. Harry Reid was the majority leader.
Harry Reid has not been very good on this issue. I'll agree with you on
know,
that.
You're
Harry
need,
Reid's been terrible. The Senate Judiciary Committee passed a very good
votes.
Bill.
17 Democrats went along with this thing, Mark.
Right.
Or
they, That wasn't their preference. Listen, I'll be the first to condemn Virginia Senator Jim Webb. And in fact, I want to urge you to call Virginia Senator Jim Webb's office and ask him why he is voting to give the president retroactive amnesty for hundreds of millions of illegal violations of monitoring American people without a warrant. I'll even give you the capital number, 202-225-3121. I disagree with Senator Webb's vote, no question. But Senator Webb has said, I didn't want to vote this way. The president, he threatened me. He said we're going to have terrorist attacks. And I, you know, Jim Webb I thought was a strong leader. Apparently he's not. But the point is that he does support the House bill, which does protect civil liberties. And let me tell you, in the minute we have left, about exclusivity. Because people don't talk about it, and it's even more scary than retroactivity. Exclusivity means that since 1978, the president has been constrained by the law. He can only wiretap American citizens pursuant to the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act. It is exclusive. They had another amendment in the Senate to decide whether or not the president should be exclusively bound by this future law. 57 voted for it, 43 voted against it.